Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number. And by Grands Biscuits. Your Grands Biscuits from the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer, so you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grands Biscuits tonight. It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie, the first snow fell this last week on Monday. Just some little flakes. Myrtle Krebsbach saw it sitting there in the Chatterbox Cafe. She ran outside, all 79, 81 years of her, however old she is. And she turned her face up to the sky, and she opened her mouth, and she took the flakes on her tongue. They got phosphorus in them, she said. It's good for your skin. We'd never heard that before, but it is sort of the dividing line. Once the first snow comes, we divide into people who love winter and people who can barely tolerate winter. Oftentimes, one person from one group is married to a person from the other, and this is a challenge for us all. The deer hunting season began this last year, and so people are wearing bright colors whenever they go down to the mailbox, wearing bright red or orange. You'd hate to die just, you know, for a handful of junk mail. It would be a terrible tragedy. Some people just don't understand deer hunting, feel that it's cruel. But the main enemy of deer in Minnesota are cars, and this seems a lot more humane, just to be shot in the forehead. Especially when you're out hoping to mate and your body is coursing with hormones and you envision success for life to end at just that point is what most men would wish for themselves given the opportunity. And there just are a lot of deer who seek death, deer who just don't care to sit through another Minnesota winter and lie off in the weeds or do whatever deer do during cold weather. We're not really sure. They don't hibernate. They just lie there and brood and complain in their silent voices. It's Armistice Day, Veterans Day, on Monday, the 11th of November, when we honor our veterans going back over history, and when the fifth graders memorize the poem in Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard among the guns below. A poem that has that terrible idea in it that the living are obliged to carry on the wars of the dead, which simply is not true. Robert E. Lee, when he decided that enough people had died for his cause, and he rode off to Appomattox Courthouse to meet General Grant, that was a noble moment when he decided to spare the lives of the rest of his men. World War I, of which there are only about four veterans remaining in this country, one of the worst wars ever fought in the history of man's cruelty to other men. Millions died in that war, commanded by generals who were far to the rear, who were looking at maps without any idea of the terrain that men were attacking across. Men rose up out of trenches and charged machine guns. They were fighting using 19th century tactics against 20th century weaponry. It was a war that nobody should have died in, and it never did end. It then led to World War II. They were continuing the war they had fought before. They were picking up the torch from those who had fallen. And perhaps World War II continues on today in these countries that were created by World War II. One could, on Veterans Day, I think, wish for peace and pray for peace and hope that this all soon comes to an end. There are people dissatisfied with fall, this late fall weather, when the trees are kind of a pencil gray against the horizon and the world is a series of shades of brown and gray and black. Some people become depressed by this. Some people become inspired by it. It seems like a Christian season somehow, that here is something that we do not control. Winter brings us all sorts of weather, some of it violent, some of it a sincere attempt to kill us, and and we have no control over it. Even the wealthy and the educated, the intellectuals and those who wield power in the world, nonetheless, when the blizzard rolls down from Alberta, all traffic slows down. You cannot go any faster than you can go. You risk disaster. We appreciate this season, which imposes conditions on us, not of our own choosing, and it challenges us in ways. It's an adventure. It's an adventure. Roger Hedlund came in to the Chatterbox Cafe. He was complaining as farmers do, because he has had a very good summer and a very good fall, and so you must complain for good luck. It's bad luck to let other people know that you're having good luck, but he planted everything in corn this year, and the price of corn went way up on account of the ethanol market. So here he is sitting on a whole lot of money, living all by himself out there for 3 days of the week. Cindy took a job down in the cities working as a mediary, as a facilitator, I think is the term for her job. She has a hard time explaining this to people in Lake Wobegon. Mainly what she just does is look people in the eye and tell them what they need to know and not beat around the bush. She is an unbeater, and that's her job. She's gone down to the cities for 3 days of the week and sometimes four. She comes back to her husband, who is living alone. She wants him to sell this farm and to move down to the cities, but what would he do down there? He would only come in closer contact with his two daughters who live down there and who have made serious mistakes in the men that they have picked and who are working in do-good jobs that pay no money whatsoever and living in near poverty. He doesn't want to see this. To see it is to be obliged to try and argue your children out of the lives that they have chosen, and to argue with them only stiffens their resolve. So he's by himself. He just finished combining his corn this last week, and there alongside the corn, the 10 acres that's still coming up in the crop that he thought was going to be his big crop about 10 years ago, he came on this grass called nut grass or nut sedge. He looked up its name, succulentum, Cyprus succulenta. Succulent, meaning that it tastes good. He ate some of it. He's always eaten weeds and become a connoisseur of the taste of them, chewing on them as you stand and do not talk to somebody standing next to you. You chew on a weed. And he decided that this might be the next big thing. People are looking for something different to put on salads. Why not put grass on salads? Something called nutweed, nut sedge. It had a sort of interesting taste and interesting texture. He had a big idea one night. He'd market this. He'd give it an Italian name. People love Italian names in connection with food. Dona Grazia, he'd call it, and he'd put it in little plastic bags, and he'd sell it in co-ops and health food stores, and he'd bring it along, and he, eventually he would plant all 220 acres in nut sedge. He started out with 10 acres. He didn't have the capital that he needed to really get this going. It would have taken 5 or 6 years of losses before he would have started making some money, and he couldn't quite make it. He then discovered a couple of things about nut sedge. One is that once you put in 10 acres, it pretty well stays there for the next season and the season after. You can plow it up. You can try to plow it up. You can plow it up twice or three or four times, and it still comes back. It's a hardy plant. He also discovered that it drives birds insane. And this would be a drawback of raising it. Perhaps that's where it got its name, nut sedge. Chickadees ate the seeds, and suddenly he was being attacked by small brown birds with speckled breasts coming at him out of the clouds at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, coming down at him, suicide kamikaze chickadees. It became unsafe to go outside in September or October. You had to watch for them. And, of course, you couldn't bring yourself to shoot a chickadee, even one that had gone berserk by eating the wrong food. So he was in a complaining mood when he came into the Chatterbox Cafe this last week, especially when Darlene brought him a big platter of hash browns and two eggs over easy and sausage. He said, what are you bringing that for me for? He said, I come in here so I can choose what I'm going to eat. This is one of my few choices I get to make all week. She said, this is what you've been ordering for the last 10 years. He said, I know that, but I want to come in here and choose. Okay, she said, what do you want? Well, he couldn't think of what he wanted. It cream of wheat and bacon and some rye toast or something. He was in an ill mood. Cindy was going to be gone for 3-4 more days, and he was running out of dishes. And the controversy down at the Lutheran Church this last week has gotten a lot of people interested. With the flu season upon us, there have been people in the worship committee who've wanted to abandon the shaking of hands during the sharing of the peace. And there are also people who have proposed that when it comes to communion, that instead of drinking from a common chalice or passing the wafers around, that we use these sacraments that are made down in Iowa, down in Des Moines, and they come individually packaged in little plastic containers, the wine in one and the wafer in the other. They're called Santa Hosts, and people thought it would be a good idea. They got the idea from Pastor Enquist, who takes this out with him when he goes out on pastoral calls. He went to see the Hoffmans out there on their farm, the two old people who are coming now towards the end of the road, two people who have survived this long. They're in their early 80s because each of them wanted to be able to bury the other just out of spite. They've survived on mutual animosity. He went out to see them. Mr. Hoffman never comes to church. Mrs. Hoffman does, just so she can complain about her husband out of his hearing. They were there in this house, smelled of cigarette smoke. She's got lung cancer. She doesn't smoke. He's the skinny one, and he's got congestive heart disease. So there they were, sitting in their recliner chairs. He came in. He asked if they wanted to take communion. Well, Mr. Hoffman, of course, did not want to. He said, no, I don't believe in any of that. He said, I don't believe there's any life after this one. That's just all an invention on the part of people to make themselves feel more important. It just when you come to the end, it's the end. When you die, you're dead. That's all there is to it. Pastor Enquist could see that Mr. Hoffman was looking through the kitchen door towards the kitchen table, and there was his bottle of bourbon whiskey sitting there. Now, with life coming to an end, he's rearranged his day, and he's expanded his concept of breakfast to include the alcohol food group. Mrs. Hoffman thought she would like sacraments, so Pastor Enquist excused himself, and he had the Santa Hosts there in his briefcase, and he went into the kitchen. You don't want to offer people the host in plastic. You want to put it in some more suitable container. So he put it in a little glass, and he put the wafer on a plate, and he brought it in, and he offered it to her. He had the cross. He had scripture right there, and she took communion. He said goodbye to them both. He packed up, and he got into his car, and he drove down to the end of their quarter-mile driveway, and he cut just a little sharp, turning right, and the right rear wheel went down into the ditch, which was very muddy from these rains, and he couldn't get it out. He went forward and back. He tried to walk it out, and it just got in deeper and deeper. So he came back to their house, the Hoffmans, and as he walked up towards the front door, he could hear them yelling at each other inside, and she was yelling at Mr. Hoffman that soon he would pass from this earth, and he would go to a place where he would now appreciate what he had put her through all of these years, except he would spend longer there. Well, Pastor Inquist didn't think he needed to be part of that theological argument, so came back down the driveway, decided not to ask them for the use of their pickup truck to get his car out. Now, Roger Hedlund had been out to look at his nut grass, thinking about how he could clean up on this someday, not to give up on this dream. Dona Grazia in a plastic bag. This could be the new thing. People are getting tired of Caesar salad and spinach salad. Need a little something extra. A little conversation piece. Nutgrass. Nut sedge. He thought he might get... And then he was walking through the field of nutgrass and picking stalks. He was going to put them on his salad that evening. And a chicken came at him. He doesn't keep chickens. It was a neighbor's chicken, and the chicken had gotten in and had eaten some of the seeds, and he'd never been attacked by a chicken before. It just came straight at him, just straight at his chest, beating its wings. He sort of panicked. He made a mistake, and he turned, and he ran, and he could feel its beak pecking him in the back, in the lower back, as he ran towards the house. This berserk chicken was going after him, avenging all that had been done to chickens in the past, avenging the entire race of chickens. And that was when Pastor Inquist came up the driveway, looking for somebody to lend him a pickup truck so they could get his car out of the ditch at the end of the Hoffman's driveway. He walked towards Roger, being chased by an insane chicken. And Pastor Inquist reached down into his pocket to find something to throw at the chicken. And he found a Santa Host in his pocket. And he flung it underhand like a frisbee, and it sailed out, glittering out into the air, and the chicken grabbed it in its beak, and the chicken fell to the ground and walked away. It was the miracle of the Santa Host. Can you give me a hand with my car? Yes, of course. Yes, of course, said Roger Hedlund. Be happy to. I'm kind of thinking of planting the rest of my farm in Nutsedge. A lot of money in this. Going to be a lot of money in this someday. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are bug-eyed.
Support for this podcast comes from Grand's Biscuits. Your Grand's Biscuits from the refrigerator are now also available in the freezer. So you can make as many or as few as you need. You can enjoy the home-baked taste of Grand's Biscuits tonight.